Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's February 8th. It is a very warm morning here in Atlanta, and we've got the cherry trees blossoming already. I think they're about a week early. I've got Trevor Wolford in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning. Sorry, my mic wasn't on.
Yeah, no, that's right. Didn't mean to catch you off guard, but you doing all right this morning?
I'm doing great.
Well, we appreciate all you do for us here and for working the controls here so I don't have to. We have Chris Brand in the studio with us this morning. He is the president and CEO of FODAC, and we're going to get to him in a minute. But good morning, Chris.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Doing well. We got some slider issues here, apparently. Before we do that, we're going to go directly to Dallas this morning. Sam is playing hooky again this morning, so we are here on our own. Actually, he was here last week, and I wasn't. But no, I was here. Was I here? I can't remember. No, I was in Dallas. That's what it was. Anyway, so this morning, and we're going to do something a little bit different in Dallas. We have Kevin Ritz with us this morning, and Kevin has recently acquired the Dallas North office of Griswold Special Care, and so we're going to interview Kevin this morning, and so without further ado, let's kick that off. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, and I would appreciate it if you would send some of that warm weather our way. It has been a little chilly here in Dallas over the past week.
Yeah, that's unusual because usually Dallas is a little bit warmer than Atlanta in the wintertime.
Yeah, we have not really had winter here. We haven't. I don't think we've gotten below freezing one time, which is very unusual. Usually by now we will have at least had a couple of ice storms. The city will have been shut down, and we will have not had a very enjoyable experience. I mean, if you remember a year ago this time during the Super Bowl, we had 6 inches of snow, and it was a disaster.
The city was paralyzed.
Yeah.
So are you just to be clear, are you complaining?
No, I am not complaining.
Missing Boise?
It's been nice. Yeah, so growing up in Boise, this is quite better. You know, Boise doesn't get a lot of snow, but it gets bitterly cold. You'll have highs of 18 and winds to go along with it. So I'm not complaining at all.
Well, we're not complaining either. We've had a very mild winter, and I'm okay with that. Although it makes you wonder when the shoe's going to drop and we're going to get that week of frigid weather. But hopefully not, because with the cherry trees already blooming, it'll knock the flowers right off there. Anyway, well, let's get into this. So, Kevin, you have just acquired the Dallas North office of Griswold Special Care. And I want to talk a little bit about that, but before we do that, as we always do with our guests, give us a little bit of your background, where you grew up, and where you went to school, and how you ended up where you are today.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, I grew up in Boise, Idaho. Went to Boise State University before everybody knew about it. I guess that makes me a hipster by saying I knew of something before everybody else did, but it was an exciting time. I was there actually during its rise. I studied business. I got a degree in marketing. After I graduated, I took a job in the Enterprise Rent-A-Car Management Training Program. That was a great experience. If you're not familiar with that program, they do a really good job of introducing you to all of the different aspects of running a small business, even though it's a privately owned company. A very large company, they run each office almost as if it's its own business. And once you become a manager of one, you are paid based on how your branch performs. And so they really give you a sense of ownership as you progress through the program. I was there for 18 months before a friend who was a partner in a software company approached me about coming on board as a sales rep for them, selling crime scene and accident reconstruction software to state police departments, city police departments, and other government organizations. I did that for a year before they offered to move me from Boise, Idaho to Dallas, Texas to oversee a new venture that they were pursuing with Texas A&M University, trying to take our or their software from the public sector into the private sector. Texas A&M has a engineering extension that trains people who work for oil companies and other organizations in safety. They train all of the firefighters for ExxonMobil and the other refineries. So they saw our software as something that would help them in their training. So I moved down to oversee that. And about 10 months later, the company I was working for was purchased by a government contractor. And because my program was more private sector based, they decided to discontinue my project, which then left me looking for something to do. And I met somebody who knew of an opening in the assisted living industry. And so I pursued that, and I was hired on as a sales rep for an assisted living community here in the Dallas area, and did that for about 8 months before the company asked me to take over as the executive director of an assisted living in Plano. And I did that for a year before I decided to make another switch and came over to Griswold Special Care and did sales and marketing before purchasing the office January 1.
Very good. Well, pretty complete overview there. Let me go back, though, to making the leap from a software technology company and being in sales there to jumping into the senior services industry. Tell me a little bit about what that was like, and you know, what were your expectations going in, and you know, now having worked with seniors for, you know, 3 years or more, you know, how you feel about it now?
Yeah, that was a very eye-opening experience. I came from a technical background selling to people who already, you know, by the time I got to them, they had already made the decision that they were probably going to go with our software. And so it was more of doing the demonstration to get the leaders on board to make a purchase. And so it was almost more of an account management type job. Going into sales in an assisted living, it's a very competitive market. Not only are you competing with other senior living communities, you're also competing against in-home care options like Griswold Special Care is. And it was much more challenging, but I enjoyed it. I worked for a community that it was a fairly small building. I think it had about 25 apartments. So it wasn't very large, but when I got there, it was definitely struggling. I think it was below about 60%. I managed to get it above 75, and it was just much more fulfilling to sell, to offer people an apartment where they were going to live for preferably a fairly long time. That was much more fulfilling than selling software to the government that taxpayers are paying for. So it was much more fulfilling, much more challenging, and it just kind of made me feel like I was making a difference, and so I decided to stick with it.
Mm-hmm. So then you were asked to manage a building, and that had to be quite different in terms of, you know, you had been out selling and interacting and you know, perhaps not as much direct interaction with the seniors, particularly in their day-to-day activities and challenges, and then you went to managing the building. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that was an even more eye-opening experience, because when I was just doing the sales, I knew what the building offered. I knew how to convince people that this was the place to entrust their loved one to. And I didn't really get involved with the operations of the building just because my job was to be out selling it. when I took over the building, I really started seeing all of the things that happened in the background to make an assisted living work. I really gained an appreciation for, first of all, the hard work that the CNAs put in to take care of all the residents there, especially when you're talking about the building I took over as the director had closer to 60 apartments. So when you're talking about four or five CNAs taking care of all the residents, managing their time, and then also overseeing the kitchen, making sure that the meals are getting out on time, that they're of high quality, that your kitchen is within budget, and then also all the maintenance. Without my training in the Enterprise Rent-A-Car Manager Training Program, I probably would have really struggled there. But my background there definitely helped, and it was just a great experience seeing how all of these facets of running an assisted living come together to make sure that the residents are taken care of, that they're happy, and that their loved ones can trust you with their lives, essentially.
So about 18 months ago then, you joined Griswold Special Care. You came in as director of sales and marketing, and you spent a year and a half learning the home care industry. Talk a little bit about the transition from kind of in-house services at an assisted living to home-based services.
Right. When I was selling assisted living, I heard a lot of one of the biggest things that people struggled with when they were making the decision to move from their home that they've lived in for so long to an assisted living is they were leaving memories. They were leaving their, in some cases, they were leaving houses that they may have built themselves or that they bought brand new. And that was a real struggle for them to kind of part with that and to come over to in-home care. And now to be able to offer the same services that keep somebody living a happy and healthy lifestyle, whether our caregivers are providing meals, just bathing, whatever it might be, now they can do that in their home. They can stay where those memories are, and we can hopefully allow them to hang on to what they've invested their lives in for a lot longer. And now, so I've taken that fulfillment of helping people, in whether we're trying to keep them safe, taking that fulfillment, and now you've added that extra layer of now they can stay at home for hopefully a few more years, maybe even longer, depending on their situation. So it also brought to light that depending on there are a lot of great assisted living companies out there. The one that I worked for, I felt like they treated their communities more as a real estate investment than an investment in people. And so even that added another layer of I want to try and keep people in their homes as long as possible so that they can feel valued and they can build those relationships with the caregiver that helped them stay in place for as long as possible.
So you don't just serve people in their individual homes, though, correct? And you,
right.
You also serve people in an assisted living or an independent living or in a nursing home or hospital.
Right. Yeah, so assisted livings are great because they're all-inclusive. Your meals are included. So maybe some of your services are. But as I mentioned, you don't necessarily always have that one-on-one care. The people that work at the assisted living or work in the nursing home or even the hospital, they can't be there with you 24 hours a day. So there are times when you may need that extra care. Maybe it's short-term, maybe it's long-term. You need somebody overnight to make sure that you're safe, whether you're navigating from bed to the bathroom or whatever it might be. So we do have clients who say, I'd really like just that extra peace of mind for a few hours a day, whether it's at night or in the morning, where we have somebody there one-on-one to make sure that mom or dad is safe during those periods when they may need that extra help. And so, yeah, you can really take our service. You can stay at home or you can use it at an assisted living. You can use it at an independent living. And you can augment whatever services you're getting through those communities with our care and really put together something that's going to work very well for you.
And it sounds like a win-win for everybody involved. It's a win for the client because they – are able to stay in place. It's a win for the facility because that resident stays there and continues to rent that room, and it, you know, obviously it's a win for you because they're your client.
Right. The senior living industry is all about occupancy. It's all about keeping residents occupying those apartments as long as they can. And if we can help those communities keep people there longer, then we would love to do that. So if you have somebody who may need that extra care and it's a struggle for the community to be able to provide that care, you can bring us in very affordably to help keep that person in place for as long as possible.
And good for them, too, because, you know, particularly if there are struggles with any kind of confusion or dementia, you know, staying in one place is obviously a good thing.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about Griswold Special Care, and, you know, also talk a little bit. So you kind of made the leap in an economy that maybe isn't the best, maybe showing some signs of improvement, signs of life, but nevertheless, you have jumped into business ownership, and you've chosen Griswold Special Care to do that. So tell me a little bit about how you made that decision to jump in there, and then also talk specifically about Griswold Special Care and why you're an owner of a Griswold Special Care franchise.
Sure. Griswold Special Care was started in 1982. We'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary coming up here in April. And it was originally an effort by a pastor's wife who had a member of their congregation pass away when her caregiver couldn't make it to her due to an illness or weather. I can't remember the story there, but she couldn't make it. And so due to dehydration, the member of their congregation unfortunately passed away. And Gene Griswold, the founder of the company, said, you know, this is something that didn't need to happen, and I'm not going to allow it to happen again to somebody in my church. So she started Griswold Special Care, and it grew over the years to the point that it became a franchise, and now there are offices all throughout the country. My personal story as far as what brought me to Griswold was after working for the office for a year and a half and getting to know the company and what the company does, I really knew that it was something I wanted to be involved with for the foreseeable future. And my wife and I have always wanted to own a business, do something that mattered and brought something to the community. And when the opportunity presented itself to buy the Dallas office, it was something that we felt would fulfill both of those things. We could own our own office, manage our own business, and give back to the community in what we do also through serving in various aspects there. Griswold Special Care, I feel like it presents an affordable model that allows people from all walks of life to be able to afford the care they need. Our rates are typically well below the average in its market, and that allows people who, if finances are an issue, we can provide a solution that can be substantially cheaper than some other companies out there. And just the mission, to provide extraordinary care through high-quality caregivers that are certified nurse's aides. They've been through our screening process. People that we trust, people that I know that I would send into my loved one's house. I would never refer somebody that I didn't trust. And being able to take that on was just something that we felt like was just an excellent opportunity.
Very good. I know you're new into this as an owner, but tell us, you know, has it been a rewarding experience so far, and you know, just why do you do what you do?
It has, and so we bought the office January 1st, and the first month was just kind of getting the lay of the land as owners. How are we going to manage our time? What is going to be between myself and my wife? How are we going to split the responsibilities? And this week it just sort of all clicked, and the most rewarding thing that's happened since January was yesterday at 1:30. I got a call from the adult child of a potential client. She had had a series of falls due to seizures from a brain tumor that she had removed 10 years ago. And these seizures had just started over the past couple of years. And the falls had been taking place, but none of them were serious until this one when she fell on the way to the bathroom and hit her head. And they needed somebody overnight for the foreseeable future starting last night. So they called me at 1:30 in the afternoon. Fortunately, I was on that side of town. I said, I can be there in 30 minutes. We can get everything done. And I said, I'll have no problem getting somebody there to take care of her tonight. And so I went and I met with our client, her husband, and their son. And it was just it was great because she was actually doing very well. She was jovial, joking around with me. Her husband was there. And it was great to go in and be able to present them an affordable option to make sure that they could have the peace of mind that at night when she needed to get up, these falls, we could mitigate that risk by having somebody there overnight and being able to provide that care. When I got home, you know, I was just really excited that, you know, it was really our first opportunity to take care of something on short notice like that that was really going to make a difference for somebody.
Mm-hmm. So affordable rates, high quality care, and a quick response time sounds like a pretty good combination to me.
Absolutely.
Kevin, if you had a piece of advice to offer our listeners relative to caring for a loved one in their home, what would that be?
I would say start thinking about it before you think you need it. What I've found through both my experience in the assisted living and then also here at Griswold Special Care is that some people wait until after the fall or after the incident to decide that the care is necessary. And oftentimes that can be too late. Fortunately, the case yesterday, I think, is going to work out. She's going to be okay. But now they have somebody there to make sure that something worse doesn't happen down the road. If you think that this is a need that's going to happen, whether it's going with an in-home care company or another option for making sure that your loved one is safe, do it before you think you're going to need it. Even if you bring somebody in for 4 hours a week just to start getting that ball rolling, getting them comfortable with having somebody in their home, it's always better to be proactive than reactive in these situations.
Excellent point. And I've often told clients and potential clients the same thing, offered the same advice. And, you know, the last thing in the world we want is for our clients to have to settle for something that is just available as opposed to something that meets their needs in a pretty specific way.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kevin. For our listeners that might want to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
The best way would be to give me a call. Our office number is 972-554-0700. You could also send me an email at kevin@gscdallas.com or visit our website at www.gscdallas.com.
Very good. Again, thanks, Kevin, for joining us this morning, and a little bit different position for you, sitting in the interview seat for a change, but nevertheless, it was great having an opportunity to chat about this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. We're going to now bring it back to Atlanta, where we have Chris Brand with us, president and CEO of an organization called FODAC, and that stands for Friends of Disabled Adults and Children. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Brad. Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you being here. I know you drove over from my side of town and had a little bit of trouble finding us.
A little bit. Quite an interesting complex around here.
You know, it's funny. I always tell my caregivers when they rely on GPS that they need to just use common sense about it because it doesn't always send you the right way. And, you know, just yesterday I was visiting with a guy over in on the west side of Roswell, coming back toward my house in an area that I knew pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I was following my GPS and just blindly following it. I made a left turn. It took me down a mile and had me make a U-turn and go back the other way, and going right past what, you know. So
brilliant, yeah.
It's lovely. So anyway, so let's jump into this. Same thing as Kevin, if you could just give us a little bit of your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, how you got to be where you are today.
Absolutely, yeah. I really grew up right here in the Atlanta area, northeast part of Atlanta, not far from where I work now at FODAC, and went to the high school over in Henderson, did some additional school at a local community college, and then out West Georgia. But I've always worked in the disability field at some level or another with adaptive vehicle companies that chop up the vans back in the 80s and 90s before they had the lowered floor minivans, and pursued physical therapy for a while. After that, worked in a hospital system here in Atlanta as a rehab tech, and benefits, kind of the whole industry kind of changed drastically with benefits being cut for patients. And before that, I had worked at this organization as actually went there to volunteer. The founder of this organization said, you grew up in the disability community, which I kind of skipped. When I was growing up, the way I got involved with disability community is a family friend of the family who used to babysit me, from the time I was 3 months old, their son had muscular dystrophy, and so we were just like best friends, like brothers growing up, and that family just kind of adopted me over here in Tucker, and I got to see the struggles that he went through before he passed away when he was 19,
right,
and got very involved with muscular dystrophy, the telethons, helping out with the summer camps, kind of really saw that experience had really positioned my life to be working in this field to help at some way or another. So, it was very natural. I knew about this organization because when I was a young teenager, I saw the founder cutting his first van at one of those adaptive shops I was at, and kind of became aware of this organization when it was started in 86. So
what did you do as a volunteer?
I went to volunteer one day a week because I was getting a little burned out in some of the other fields I was working in, and the founder hired me immediately. So the next day I took a position he offered me to be his donations coordinator for all the equipment coming in. So I was the liaison for all the other donation sources in Atlanta back in the 90s. 93 to 96, and actually was driving the truck as well, around the town, scheduling the pickups, but a lot of these places, I knew the people that were there from somewhere or another growing up in Atlanta and knowing a lot about the community. And so I checked out about 3 years after being on staff, kind of not seeing a lot of growth in the organization, went to do some other things. That was when I was doing physical therapy and other things. And meanwhile, the organization appeared to have doubled in size. In 1999, around 99, I came back to work with the founder and said, you've got more room here for programs. You could start this program for vehicle modifications. You could do more with donated cars now and reselling them. And they had a thrift store on site. So he hired me to come back to be a program manager. And shortly thereafter, I realized that his health had gotten so bad that the foundation community wanted a successor. They wanted a management team around him, which he didn't have.
Right.
And so he started grooming me to take over for the executive director role. And I didn't realize how bad a financial shape we were in as well. So, we had some major work. The board and I had some major work to do to turn around that organization. It was literally about to close the doors at the end of 2000, 2001 when I was coming on as director. Yeah.
And, it's such a common theme, though, for nonprofits. Mm-hmm. When you have a founder that is getting toward the end of his or her career, a lot of them don't make it. A lot of them are one generation, organizations, and so it's terrific that this has survived and thrived in this environment. So, have you been with them then since 1999?
Yes, back in, so that's going on 16 years now total with the organization. So I've seen a huge amount of growth and for the organization, but also the whole reuse industry. I mean, we've been a part of a federal demonstration grant in 2000s that really identified the major ones around the country. You know, we thought we were the only one, but it's not true. And but then we found out that we really are the biggest in size and scope of how much equipment we can accept and reissue.
Wow. Let me just interject here and take you back for a minute. And let's, if you could, just describe what FODAC is. And, you know, we've got
a little bit
of the history, but give us a little bit more insight into what you do and how you do it and why.
Absolutely. The main focus of the organization is collect used or sometimes new home medical equipment, wheelchairs, hospital beds, walkers, canes, crutches, anything you would use in, with a physical mobility issue or daily living item over the bed tables. All of these items we're collecting, power chairs, scooters, and reissuing them at no charge back to the community, minus some parts or battery costs that we have to pass along. And we're helping about 3,600 requests, filling those requests each year with multiple items many times, over 5,000 items going out the front door. And in addition to that, we're doing emergency response, like 250,000 of equipment. Last spring, Invacare donated and other manufacturers to help with the tornadoes. So it's a flow through directly to other agencies, you know, as far away as Joplin.
Wow.
So Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Joplin, they all receive something or shipments.
So a couple of opportunities here. One is for those who have medical equipment that they don't know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other would be for those that need medical equipment. How do people typically become aware of FODAC? And then what's the process for, you know, both donating and for receiving?
Exactly. And we struggle to get that marketing and awareness to access us, but the Atlanta community by and large is pretty aware of us. I mean, all the major hospitals who have indigent patients who are banged up and need equipment, they'll refer people to us. We have Shepherd Center as a partner who are referring clients to us weekly. Grady Memorial referrals to us weekly. We also deliver excess equipment down to Grady that they issue directly to people for fall prevention and different things. So people could find us through United Way or Googling donate a wheelchair, or, you know, they could find us out there on the websites.
So 3,600 requests a year, 5,000 items in and out the door. Are you at your capacity?
You know, we're really not. We just went through some renovations to increase our capacity and our flow at our facility, our 65,000 square foot facility. We renovated with $1.5 million the end of this past September. So we've added like state of the art cleaning, wheelchair washing machines and hub scrubs and pressure washers and steamers, wet rooms, drying rooms. And, you know, we have a lot of more we can do with that equipment, our problem is getting the equipment in so that we can meet the requests. You know, we're that resource. We get emails daily from around the country and Georgia and around the world at times. But, you know, the common theme is I'm having trouble. I have a 25-year-old special needs daughter, and we can't get a wheelchair for when she needs outings in the community, and we struggle with it. So it's caregivers that need the assistance so much of the time, not just the person with a disability.
So is there a waiting list then?
There are. For most things, there really are. It may be a number of days or a number of weeks, but then you get into bariatric equipment, which we rarely get. We can only distribute what's donated, what we collect, that we can repair if it needs repairing. So it's a struggle for us. You know, we have 500-700 people on waiting lists. But not many people for common items. You know, hospital beds, there's not much of a wait.
Right.
There's not much of a wait for the standard adult-sized chairs, you know, the smaller ones. And so we're constantly working on improving our efficiencies and donations from assisted living centers. We pick up. We have a truck in Atlanta, goes to all around the metro counties. And the other cities in Georgia also collect for us that we deliver to, like Rome, Columbus, Macon, Bainbridge, even Columbia, South Carolina. They also, we deliver some of their requests from their area through partners that we have, and we collect some donations from them.
What's your criteria for eligibility to receive equipment?
You know, it's very low threshold for, it's really a medical needs, and we kind of a triage with how urgent this is, medical necessity, you know, critical, or is it just a medical helpful, medically helpful item to someone? The only thing we require a prescription for is a power chair, and everything else is non-prescription related, so you don't have any financial, for the majority of what we do, you don't have a financial hoops to go through or proving a lot of other resources have been exhausted, but we want people to exhaust other resources first before coming to us. Even if it's going to be a delay in 8 or 10 months for them to get something, we'll still provide it because we know you need it every day.
Sure.
Until you get your new item.
Now, are most of the people that are receiving this equipment disabled adults as opposed to seniors?
You know, yeah, well, majority are seniors. You know, you'd be surprised, and that's partly the problem that the system's too complicated. If they're not already being discharged from a hospital with someone else working on this, discharge planners and case managers, if they're just to the doctor and have mobility issues and problems, they don't really know how to navigate their own system, and that's, you know, for themselves.
But because the obvious question that I would have, and I think our listeners would have, is, well, doesn't Medicare cover that?
No. And that's a common myth that people would assume. Oh, doesn't Medicare, insurance and benefits pay for all that? No, they don't, and they're getting worse. There's competitive bidding affects that around the country. The government's constantly trying to cut back what they're paying, and they do that by denying people and or delaying so long that you end up giving up going through the process to get access to it.
So certainly Medicare covers some things. You know, I mean, somebody's in the hospital or in rehab and they're going home and they need a hospital bed. How do you know if Medicare is going to cover something or not?
Yeah, that's usually, if it's a situation like that, a case manager or discharge planner is going to really work with your benefits and local vendors, providers, to see if they can't get you set up soon to get some of that equipment. But some of the copays are too high for people.
Okay.
You know, you have a $2,000 copay. What do you do about that?
Yeah.
You're priced out of getting access to accessing your benefits.
So that's, you know, that's something I think a lot of people miss, the copay part of it. And then, obviously, if,
emails,
$2,000 could be huge.
Some of the emails in front of me, I can't afford the copay, or Medicaid will not cover this item for him. Mm-hmm. It's Medicaid issues. It's private insurance issues.
Right.
People have been laid off who now they don't have health insurance. What are they doing for this equipment? You know, it's a huge gap. And then even when power chairs are funded, or children's pediatric stuff, anything with custom seating or minimum 6 months waiting.
Right.
So what do you do for those 6 months for the caregiver?
Right.
You sit on a couch all day? Or do you have a backup piece of equipment, which we can provide people? Benefits don't provide any backup, you know.
Yeah.
We can provide that. So a safety net.
And to Kevin's point, most of these kinds of activities or needs are, sadly, either surprises or the result of a failure to plan.
Yeah.
And so it's always an emergency, right?
It's true. And sometimes it's not their fault. They're thrust into this world. Like
my
17-year-old spinal cord injury single mom now has to move because they can't even take care of the child in their apartment.
Right.
They need another vehicle. They need all this equipment, you know. And so, you know, people just really, really struggle. So,
it's a
lot of struggles out there.
You know, I mean, you can't predict an accident of some kind that suddenly causes someone who wouldn't be normally expecting to have to take care of a loved one.
Strokes, many of these issues that where people are just, now their whole world's upside down. They can't get access, like in the home care elevators. They need stair lifts. They need to move, but they can't move. You know, transportation in Atlanta is huge and everywhere. So
I'm sure you have a myriad of stories where you all have been able to help somebody, you know, things that touch your heart in some way.
Yeah.
Is there one that you can pull out and talk about?
You know, they're all just so meaningful to me. I mean, they really are. Just the work every day. Clients in tears in the front lobby breaking down just because it's been such an emotional roller coaster with everything they're going through, and we're providing this answer to prayer for them. I mean, it is just amazing. You know, parents, you know, my kids falling out. I'm up all night. My kid's falling out of this bed, and this one you're giving us is going to meet that need, and I'm not going to have to worry. You know, I'm going to be able to sleep at night. There's just so many instances that really touch our hearts every day, you know.
Where do you see, I mean, FODAC, it sounds like you've changed a lot, grown a lot since you came back in 1999. Congratulations on being able to take that to the next level. Where do you see FODAC going from here in the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, there's a lot of things that we want to build on with, we're helping in capacity building around the country all the time from this national network we were in. It was in Florida a couple weeks ago with a summit of people from all different cities looking to do what we do in Atlanta in their somewhere, Orlando, Tampa, somewhere, because the need's huge and there's equipment out there.
Right.
So we'd love to get our building facility paid off in the near future, which we still owe a little bit on, a good bit on. Get that behind us so that we can look at expanding or assisting other cities. Dallas has a place we talked to about, you know, a little bit of coaching to these other startup places around the country.
Right.
You know, what do you do? How do you do it? And we kind of explain that to them. And then other best practices around the country we're sharing. There's a place in San Antonio that we work with. It's a pretty large reuse of medical equipment facility. So, you know, we're looking to work more with Medicaid in some strategic partnerships, looking to get our building paid off. You know, it's a struggle because we don't have any one large source of funding every year.
Right. Well, and that's exactly the next question I was going to ask you is, you know, given the fact that you don't charge for the equipment, how are you funded?
You know, it's a very big mix of foundations, individuals, corporations, the thrift store, which we resell household items. So we can pick up if someone's downsizing with medical equipment or household things. And really, 100% of those go right back into serving someone who needs that equipment. That's helping us fund that. So we have some government flow-through dollars for home modifications that we access for people, about $200,000 from Federal Home Loan Bank from this year alone, but that's all just going to go right to other contractors to do modifications for people at no charge. But, yeah, it's constantly trying to get some sponsorships for our special events. You know, we have a walk, which is very common to have walks, but we do have one in May at Stone Mountain Park, and a golf tournament that MedTrade is actually the biggest, you know, exhibits in the country for manufacturers for home medical equipment. They're getting behind us, supporting us, and going to promote it to their exhibitors.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that'll take off some with some sustainable funding. So
it's, I'm sure it's a challenge every year to meet your budget.
It is. It always is. And we'd rather not be focused on that budget and focus on service and expansion and helping this, you know, to be successful and more accessible to everyone.
How big is your staff?
It's about 13 full-time and 9 part-time, and then we have 40 to 60 volunteers a month from other agencies and other.
Okay.
Yeah, and the power wheelchairs, manual wheelchair shops. It's an outstanding place that you should come tour. Anyone who would love to come tour about, hey, what all do you all offer? Or, you know, kind of take a look at your facility. It's always open for that. And
what sort of opportunities are available for people that might want to volunteer?
Oh, everything from turning wrenches on manual chairs, power wheelchairs, helping with hospital beds, getting warehouse organized. Thrift store is a very popular place, and we need help all the time in there because that's one of our main generation sources of funding that we need to grow. And so we need help sorting items in that area, which we expanded in our renovations, that whole area. It's just beautiful now.
Right.
It's,
so no shortage of opportunity
to
contribute.
No shortage.
And do you have individual donors? So, I mean, I guess you must if you're doing the walks and that sort of thing. So
we really do.
There's an opportunity to participate financially as well.
Annual giving or being a part of a special event. You know, 96% of our funds go to operations and direct services. Only 4% is for overhead and fundraising, which is incredibly low.
Yeah, that is very low.
And, you know, people can find out about us on GuideStar.org, which we have a full profile.
Okay.
And we're high-ranked there. You know, and because of the high value of this equipment we're providing at no cost, our operating budget is multiplied by 10 in the retail value of the equipment we provide. So for every dollar donated, it's $10 in equipment and services to someone.
That's terrific. If somebody wants to donate a piece of equipment, what's the process?
Oh, we'd love for someone to either give us a call or let us know over our website. We have a contact us email, which is great because that's the best place to start, because then we can, if it's not close enough for us to come pick up, we can let you know about another partner that might, okay, in another state or nearby that could pick it up or that you could drop it off to.
So if somebody had a wheelchair, you know, within the city limits of Atlanta, would that be something
would
come and pick up?
Sure, then? Yeah. Okay. And it's a little struggle because of our overwhelming load of small requests to pick up small items and larger. Our trucks typically try to get larger loads, and the drop-off sites around Atlanta are what we kind of point people to if they can assist us with smaller one items or two items of this, which are in Marietta, Fayetteville, and Norcross, all over.
Yeah, so convenient to somebody.
Yeah, hopefully relatively convenient. That would help us tremendously because of the effort it is to be all over the city.
Excellent. Well, if you had a piece of advice for our listeners who might have family or friends that may need equipment or that are struggling to navigate the system to get what they need, what piece of advice might you give them?
I would say don't give up and don't take no for an answer. So many people don't realize that you can appeal denials, and many times those denials don't mean that, they just mean that you didn't get approved that day, but it doesn't mean that you're not eligible to get that equipment. You have to really be tenacious in your advocacy on behalf of that person to get what they need, and you can reach out to us to get more information to see if we can't help in the interim.
Excellent. That's great advice. For people that want to find out more about FODAC, whether it's to donate a piece of equipment, to volunteer, or to try to get a piece of equipment, how would they contact you?
Oh, the best place is just directly on off our website contact us page, and it's FODAC.org, www.fodac.org. Or they could call our number. We have an 800 number on our website, or the local number is 770-491-9014. So, we're really advocates for the DME industry, for the vendors, the manufacturers, but the consumers primarily. And we'd love to help in any way. And we always need equipment from assisted living facilities. Many of them don't know about us or throwing away this equipment that people pass away and leave behind. We really need people to reach out to us and let us know, because we're going to keep it local. We're not just going to take it and send it overseas, which is good. Our focus is local in the States here, and we're really going to try to help people, your neighbors down the street.
Excellent. And if they wanted to reach out directly, they could do that via the contact page on your website.
Yep, exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being here this morning. Terrific information. Great.
Thank you.
Look forward to coming out and taking a tour.
Yes. Love to have you out. Absolutely. So,
okay. Well, again, thank you to Chris. Thank you to Kevin in Dallas. And as always, we appreciate you, our listeners, for tuning in today. If you would like to listen to a rebroadcast of this show, you can go to ugeriaradio.com. And we will be here again next week with another edition of the show. I will not be here, but Sam and Kevin will be joining, and I'm going to be taking a little bit of vacation. So with that, we close as we always do. If the youth of this nation are our greatest national resource, then it stands to reason that the seniors of our nation are its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.